Namaste and welcome to the Bharat Varta Weekly with me, Roshan Karyappa. I'm joined by Nirav and Abhishek, your hosts. And we'll run you through all of the key news and events from the week that was. Hi, Nirav. Hi, Abhishek. Great to have you guys back.
Hi, Roshan.
Hi, Carrie. Hi, Abhishek.
Hello. Yeah, so plenty of news to cover this week. I mean, we're going to be talking about Air India's disinvestment, the Ordnance Factory Board being dissolved, coal shortage in India, telecom sector developments, the India-UK vaccine spat, and of course, China deploying more troops on the line of control. Plenty to cover. But before that, I mean, let's just talk about the episode that we put out last week. To me, I think in the recent times, I mean, this was one of the most special episodes. It was a very difficult conversation to have with Mr. Vijay Kumar. Over the last 10, 12 years, he has been striving really hard to bring back our stolen murtis. And it's not an easy task at all, right? And in the last... up until I think 2014, there were about 19 murtis which had been returned, right? And we are seeing after that, I mean, it's almost, the number is almost close to 200 now. And then the Prime Minister, as you see in the picture, got back about 150 plus murtis on his recent visit to the US. It's certainly a difficult conversation, but I think every person invested in the dharmic culture should definitely have a look at it, and hopefully things get better on this front. All right, let's perhaps start with the first piece of news, which is Air India's disinvestment. According to sources, Tata Group will now be the new owner of the airline. However, the Secretary of Department of Investment and Public Asset Management, Deepam, has tweeted saying this is incorrect. Either way, a meeting of the committee of members on Air India disinvestment is to be held next week. Nirav, this is, life coming full circle, right, in some sense. So what are your thoughts on this?
This was nationalized in 1953, and it was Tata Airlines, which became Air India. Also, there were a lot of smaller regional airlines at that point of time. One was Kalinga Air, which was run by Biju Patnaik, which were all merged into Indian Airlines, the domestic arm. And then finally, both of them were merged together. So anyways, what has happened is you had like two pre-qualified bidders. Tata is the highest bid, but obviously there's going to be some amount of KYC and financial ability, etc. In all purposes, like for all practical purposes, this deal is done. There will be some sort of resistance from some sort of unions. There are a lot of people who say that disinvestment is bad. According to me, it's not selling family jewels. It is, you have something which is run very inefficiently, which is costing you a lot to store these family jewels. And maybe if it is maintained by someone else, it'll run a lot better. It's good for the consumers. It's good for the government. Tatas have a great record in running Taj hotels. Probably it can be a premium airline competing with the likes of Emirates, Qatar, Singapore Airlines. Also, Tata has two JVs. So now it'll be interesting how they do it as well. They have one low-cost JV with AirAsia. They have a premium airline JV, Vistara, which is with Singapore Airlines. There's also potential talks that Singapore Airlines has an option to invest more, about 35% of the airline 3 years from now. So if Tata takes it over, if they run it in a very good manner and they turn it around, then Singapore Airlines has the option to put in more money as well. So I think that is fantastic. One thing is all the airlines, Indian owned airlines, so including Jet, including Indigo, a lot of them lost market share on the international routes to the Middle Eastern airlines. A lot of Indians travel to Europe and the US, and they lost market share to Emirates, Etihad, and Qatar Airways. Probably with a much better run Air India, you will see that coming back. Also, on the domestic front, there are challenges that Indigo has become the biggest market share leader. You will see Vistara, Air Asia plus Air India somehow consolidate. So it'll be interesting to see how they operate. Do they have different versions, a low cost and a full service? I personally believe if anyone who can turn around this big behemoth, it is an elephant, making it from a white elephant to like a productive elephant. I think the Tata Group is well set for it. Also, the Tata Group has a lot of goodwill amongst Indian public. So you will see people going and like using this airline, even if it's a premium airline, paying up for it, because that's what you get when you visit Taj hotels. So I think it's a fantastic thing. Air India privatization also shows the government's commitment towards disinvestment. And it's a very, very big signal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, people have been talking about this for years and years, especially on Twitter. And it's good to see this come to fruition. You know, Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, who we spoke about some weeks back, is also starting up a new airline, Akasa, and he has spoken about how the demand will come back, right? Travel and hospitality is going to be back with a bang. In fact, it's already picking up. All right, moving on. The Ordnance Factory Board has been dissolved and split into 7 defense public sector undertakings. Its 41 factories and 70,000 employees on the rolls will now be split up into these new PSUs. Officials said the restructuring has been done with an eye on stepping up India's defense exports game. At present, the 41 factories are made up of 11 ammunition and explosive factories, 10 weapons, vehicles and equipment factories, and a total of 20 material and components, armored vehicles and ordnance equipment factories. Abhishek, this is an interesting development. How do you think this will improve our standing in defense exports?
Many people are calling it actually a game-changing event. To look back, the Ordnance Factory Board concept comes from like the 18th century, right? The first of these factories was set up somewhere in the 1780s or around that. Essentially, before this change, there were just factories lying under the under a department of the Ministry of Defense. So essentially what would happen is like the armed forces would raise requisitions on these factories and they would take their own time to just get back on these orders. There has been a lot of criticism of them in terms of the poor quality products that they have provided, in terms of the delays that they have done. Essentially, all the common bad points that you can think of in a government-run department all were, you know, applicable to these OFPs. So now, over the years, there have been reports after reports from committees after committees which have suggested this change, right? Where they have said that moving into a corporate structure would definitely improve things. Now, let's be clear, they are still PSUs, but then we have good performing PSUs also, especially in the strategic structure. So what will happen is that immediately, as you said, PSUs will have to, you know, think about their own profitability and efficiency. Once you become a company, you are able to export, right? It's not just a single buyer that you are catering to in terms of the Indian Armed Forces. So the moment any of these 7 PSUs are able to build up and create a world-class product, there will be demand for that from other armed forces across the world, right? And I think it's a win-win. We will get, first of all, the Indian armed forces will themselves benefit from a greater accountability point of view. They are likely to get things now quicker, cheaper, and you know, faster. And then, you know, we will have the potential for exports to countries outside India as well. I think this is a pretty good move by the government, something which should have happened long back. As we say, it's good that it's happening now.
That's one of the few Hindi proverbs that I remember also. Der aaya durast aaya, right? So, yeah.
Yes.
There you go. Yeah, some interesting comments coming in on YouTube. Mandar Karnik says, it took many committee reports saying the same thing to achieve OFB dissolution. And it will take 5 years to get the benefits of the corporatization also. Moving on, India is facing a severe shortage of coal on the domestic front. With rising power demands in the domestic sector, Indian utilities are also facing a severe shortage of coal, which is a primary fuel powering 70% of India's energy consumption. Heavy rains at several mines in the country and logistic woes have created a shortage of domestic supplies. The primary supplier of coal in India, Coal India, has said that it would increase production to meet the demand. Nirav, how do you think we should bridge this gap?
Yeah, so I think one way to look at it is you have to look at the positive side first, that there's a lot of demand for power. So that means a lot of factories, a lot of industries have come back and they're running at almost full capacity. You're seeing exports picking up as well. So that is the reason for this huge demand. On the supply of coal, there are a lot of, it's a very complex issue. So what has happened is international prices of coal have gone up quite a bit. That is because there's a natural gas shortage in Europe. So a lot of the mothballed coal power plants are also looking to be restarted and they are importing coal on an emergency basis. This transition to cleaner energy is going to be volatile. So that is one big issue. Second one is you are seeing a lot of China put sanctions on Australia, but a lot of Australian coal shipments are stuck on ports of China. Now, neither is China using them, nor can India buy it. I think there are some talks going on where India will buy these coal supplies that are stuck at Chinese ports and divert the ships because India has a coal shortage. Then you have mines being shut in India due to rains. So there is a lot of complex things. I think what has happened is in 2020, COVID hit and demand saw a big shock. And suddenly everybody was stuck with inventories. There's no demand, all factories, everything is shut. No consumers are buying anything. Now in 2021, as we open up, the supply can't keep up with the demand because the demand, a lot of pent up demand is coming back. And there are supply bottlenecks because some things are shut here and there. So yes, I think it is an issue. We shall keep seeing this. Maybe this leads to a higher input prices at every stage. So maybe inflation goes up, but we all have to deal with it. And as you mentioned that Coal India said that they'll supply more. Probably the Indian authorities will look at importing, even if it at a higher price from elsewhere. And this also tells that we need a lot more investment in the power sector. It's good that if we are producing more things, the industry should be able to pay for the power prices. So I look at it as a glass half empty, glass half full thing. Right now there's a short-term pain, but hopefully we solve it and we move ahead.
God bless whoever is modeling all of this through some Excel. There have been some interesting developments in the telecom sector. The Department of Telecommunications has asked Idea and Airtel to pay 3050 crores in penalties. Reportedly, the service providers flouted license conditions by denying Jio adequate points of interconnection in 2016. BSNL is also looking to raise 40,000 crores to deploy indigenously developed 4G sites and meet debt liability. The telco would require about 12,500 crores to deploy 100,000 indigenously developed sites and rupees 5,000 crore for transmission network equipment. Abhishek, a lot of things happening in the sector. We certainly should cover these on a separate podcast for sure. Can you give us a broad highlights? I mean, what is the significance of all of this?
On the Airtel Vodafone fine, it sort of feels like the government took two steps forward, but this is like one step back for those telcos, right? So the larger context is the relief given to these telcos last month, right? When there was a 4-year moratorium announced on the AGR dues. Obviously, those sums were really significant, right? So much so that the continuation of Vodafone itself was at stake that time, right? Because had that moratorium not been announced, the going concern capability of the organization was coming into concern. So while the government did a good job in putting the moratorium, right now, this kind of feels a step back in terms of asking, the telecom department asking these telcos to pay about 3,000 crores within 3 weeks. Airtel has about 1,000 crores due and Vodafone 2,000 crores. Now, as you said, this is because allegedly in 2016, which was around the time, right, Jio was breaking big time, right? These companies are said to have not provided the required number of interconnection points between networks. So, and obviously these things have been challenged in the courts as well. So we are not sure if the companies will immediately comply or they will sort of try to again go the legal route and try to fight it in the courts. I think that is more likely to happen. I think the court case is already in the Delhi High Court, but they have not really given any verdict on this. So interesting development there, not so positive for the telcos. The other one, as you said, is BSNL. Now, BSNL has basically asked for a sovereign guarantee from the center, right, as they work to repay debts and meet their capex requirements. Now, what they've said is that they have not got much success in the land monetization process they were working on, especially after the pandemic set in. So they are back on the timetable for that process and hence kind of struggling to, raise funds for their capex expansion plans and debt repayment. The capex expansion plans, of course, are mostly for deployment of 4G sites across the country. So yeah, I mean, BSNL continues to be in a bit of a struggle, I think. And while they are a government company and they're not really facing the same kind of existential threat that a Vodafone was facing, one would hope that they are also able to get their house in order relatively soon. It's for the betterment of the sector's growth in India, because companies like BSNL do fill a sort of gap in the less sort of profitable sectors and segments around the country, right?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. In some international news, India and the UK have gotten into a bit of a disagreement over the recognition of vaccination certificates. The UK had raised doubts over the Indian COVID-19 vaccination certification process. They announced that all Indians must take a COVID test and quarantine for 10 days. In response, the center decided to impose reciprocal travel curbs, including mandatory quarantine for travelers arriving from the UK. Nirav, we have trade talks coming up later this year. So it's a bit of an awkward backdrop to leading up to it, right? What do you think?
Yeah, so I think the basic argument what India is doing is it's the same formulation. It's the same AstraZeneca vaccine. One is produced in India and the other one is produced in the UK and in Belgium, which is used in UK and Europe, right? So they're saying that if a person is vaccinated in India, they should be considered on par with people vaccinated in Europe with the same vaccine. So that is why India has done this. I think from the UK's perspective, they are not sure about the perception of India overseas is that your vaccine certificate could be fake or you had like a fake COVID test earlier. So I think it's a battle of perception. India has done this small tit for tat kind of a treatment, which is also showing that we won't accept terms just laid on upon us. Similarly, on the trade deal, which comes in the future as well, I think India is going to not take things, whatever is offered to it, will fight back to see, to try and get a trade deal, which is fair, say on both sides. In terms of like people who are affected, I think the most of people coming from the UK are people of Indian origin, either UK citizens or Indians who are working in the UK. If they want to come back in, but at this moment, like really tourism or something hasn't picked up in that large scale. So I think there's going to be a bit of inconvenience. I think this is a little bit of posturing. Hopefully this gets resolved soon enough where they allow Indians who are vaccinated to travel to UK without quarantine. Cases in India are also similar number as the cases in UK. UK has 70 million population or 7 crores. India has 138 crores population, so almost 20 times, right? So I think these things probably will get ironed out. And hopefully we do get a trade deal eventually. And I think that will be a big flip for Indian manufacturing and services sector, boost our exports. So you guys have been doing a great job connecting with the friends of the Commonwealth. And hopefully something comes out of it. This is a small, minor hiccup, according to me, and should be resolved soon.
Yeah. No, we will definitely do an episode with the CFOC on the trade deals and we'll let you know as soon as that is finalized. Meanwhile, China has deployed more troops along the entire border. Indian Army commanders are hoping that the 17-month confrontation in Ladakh will come to an end. However, the People's Liberation Army has deployed in considerable numbers along the LAC. I think last time I mentioned LOC. I'm sorry, it's LAC. The Pakistan Army is also supporting two infiltration attempts by terrorists. Army Chief General Navarane hopes that the disengagement process will be taken further in the upcoming 13th round of military talks. Abhishek, do you think that this will be resolved or, you know, the status quo will be kept up?
So, yeah, I mean, while the talks have been ongoing on the one hand, right, you said the 13th one is coming up, 13th round. China, on the other hand, has been ramping up its military deployment, right, on the border. And so I think, so it's kind of, I don't think this was sort of unpredicted or unpredictable. I mean, there was a recent incident which came into the media news a few days back where about 100 Chinese troops had sort of infiltrated into parts of Uttarakhand, right, before they went back. So I think China's or Xi Jinping's sort of idea of sort of humiliating India on the border did not really work out as they had thought, right? The Indian army was able to sort of combat that pretty well, but that doesn't mean, or so now for the Chinese to partly go back would be seen as a sort of defeat or a humiliation or a back down, right? And it will not play well in their domestic constituency. So I think it is only natural that the Chinese are trying to sort of hold on and actually ramp up tensions at the border without wanting to get into a war. So, I mean, this sort of situation is often called no peace, no war, sort of stalemate at the border, right? And I don't see any quick withdrawal that the Chinese will do. I think, as the Indian Army Chief said, India will continue to match the deployments that the Chinese are doing there. And as usual, the winter months are going to be a pretty difficult time for our troops in very hostile conditions. So, yeah, I there is no good or nice way out, unfortunately, for us with China now.
Yeah. All right. The RBI has introduced new rules for auto debit on debit cards, credit cards, and UPI payments. Banks will now have to secure account holders' consent before deducting an amount for recurring payments. Recurring payments will also be protected with an additional factor of authentication. All banks using UPI prepaid payment instruments, debit or credit cards without AFA will be discontinued. Banks will have to alert account holders in advance, provide OTP facility for auto debit over 5,000 rupees, and will require customers to go through a one-time registration to complete future transactions. Well, I mean, we've been hearing some chatter on social media about this, right? I mean, obviously, it's a lot of pain for anyone in the recurring payment, that kind of business, right? SaaS businesses, for example, or content creators and so on. I think if you look at the whole consumer protection at one end and ease of doing business at the other, India's regulators heavily index on the consumer protection front, right? I mean, and this plays out in multiple different axes in India itself, right? And it's a pain, and I mean, I definitely think it could have been managed better, at least this whole one-time authentication thing. But what do you guys think?
Yeah.
Nirav, you're on mute.
Yeah. Huh. So I think it always reminds me of like a lot of people register in beginning of Jan in like a gym, and they have this recurring payment and never go there, right?
Yeah.
So I think, see, some of this probably, as you, there's always a spectrum, and you, as Indian regulators are going too much towards consumer protection, but you also need to enable or facilitate things for business. And so maybe things like where I would have drawn the line, probably say that if you have, you register one time for say 12 equal payments, but auto renewal of that could have been stopped. So you don't check monthly, but probably once a year. But this is what has been done. Everybody will slowly adapt to it. Maybe it's a hassle, but this also in a way puts more pressure on content creators not to sell lemons, where you actually sell a good product and people want to renew, right? So in a way, it is such, or like you kind of like when you sign up for a gym or you sign up for a newsletter, you sign up for some service, you continue using it. So it's in a way, it's also some sort of pressure on those people that you kind of create such good content that people want to renew it every month, right? So I think that's the case. It's going to be a little bit of a hassle with all Netflix subscriptions and Amazon Prime, etc. But it is what it is. Probably you'll see more discounts for one-time upfront payments that you pay once for 12 months and then you're done with it. But yeah, let's see how it works.
Thanks, Nirav. I'll take the hint. So yeah, I mean,
I'm disappointed to myself. Yeah, it's
no, just kidding. So yeah, I think there are some exceptions, of course. I mean, I think SIPs, EMIs, all of those things are excluded. And also, I mean, I think customers can also make an exception saying that they don't want to do this OTP thing for certain services that they're sure of. And like you said, I mean, they can also put down up until when, you know, for a period of a year or something like that, that they would not want, this auto debit, this OTP process to be followed. So yeah, and also it's been long pending apparently, right? So yeah, all right. And finally, in some exciting news, India and Taiwan could enter into a semiconductor mega deal. Officials in New Delhi and Taipei met a few weeks back to discuss a deal that would bring a chip plant worth about $7.5 billion to India. The deal could also see tariff cuts on components and other raw materials and a mega IT park with space for 100 Taiwanese companies. So Nirav, we just spoke about the troop buildup, on the border with China, right? This is certainly going to, add to the tensions, right? And we've seen also earlier this year, I mean, how some of the automobile companies and, phone suppliers, etc., manufacturers, OEMs have been affected, right? Do you see this helping to that end immediately, or it's going to probably take a long while?
I think this will take a while. So first is you're looking at finding like a particular site where you can have like a big IT park. This will be a hardware park. So India has done very well in software, but almost nothing in hardware. So with 100 Taiwanese companies, also you need like things like water, you need skilled manpower. So I think this is going to take a while. But what is happening is we are seeing a global semiconductor shortage. The big problem is you have at the very cutting edge of the top firms, you have a Taiwanese company, TSMC, a couple of other Taiwanese companies. Then you have Samsung. Then the next level is Intel and AMD in the US and Qualcomm. And after that, there are some Chinese companies. Rest of the world is kind of like really been cut out. You have some European players like Ericsson, but they are like way behind. And India is actually not present at all in this semiconductor manufacturing. So this is one good part where India has a lot of IT software services. We need to get the hardware business as well. So one is, it is something to build like resilience of supply chains. Two is for Taiwan, they need a strategic partner. There's always tensions across the Taiwan Strait. If there's more aggression from China, they could be blocking the shipping lanes. So they need a partner which is resilient and a little bit further away from China. So I think that is one thing. Two is you've seen, again, this goes back to this complexities of the world where due to COVID. So last 20, 30 years, you've seen very tight supply chains at the lowest cost, optimizing for efficiency. So now you need robustness and resilience. What if one place is shut? You need parallel supply chain somewhere else. So that plays into this. You also saw, first, automobile demand during COVID fell off a cliff. So all the automobile, the plants which are making semiconductors for automobiles, they were shifted to making for laptops because demand for that went through the roof with home-based learning and working from home. So what has happened is now as we come out of COVID, automobile production is being ramped up, but they can't produce enough due to shortage of semiconductors. So I think all of these things are playing in. Intel is also adding capacity, building another plant in Arizona. I think this is something which is needed for India in the long run. It also provides Taiwan with a hedge. Maybe China is upset. Here you're seeing Dushman ka Dushman Dost or whichever way you call it. But you are building strategic alliances. See, India has been part of the Quad. India gets more friendly with Taiwan. It helps both the countries. So that's a positive. And you look at it, India right now, the biggest import is oil. But next one is electronics, right? If you want to have a big electronics industry, you need to get hardware manufacturing and manufacture chips domestically. So that is required. So I think it's a win-win situation, but this is too optimistic to expect anything immediate. I think this also, like it also develops our hardware know-how and manpower as well, right? If Taiwanese companies seed these plants, but a lot of the personnel will be from India. So I think it's a very positive deal, but probably like a 3 to 5 year time frame.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think, as we said, derai durasthai, right? So All right. We have a couple of very interesting episodes coming up. I mean, there's been much talk about the Prime Minister's visit to the US. So we'll be joined by Sunanda Vashisht and Srimath Talukdar to talk about this. We had also done an episode earlier on India-US relationships post the Biden administration coming to power. Right. And yeah, I mean, a lot of things that were said on that episode has panned out well. Of course, Abhishek was part of that as well. Right. And in the Wellina's talk series, we have an interesting guest, Tracy Follows, who's the CEO of FutureMate. Plenty of like geopolitical stuff and future facing stuff. Definitely some very, very good content to look forward to. All right. Before we leave you, we want to wish a very happy birthday to our dear friend and fellow host, fellow traveler, Nirav Kanodra. Happy birthday, Nirav. Hope you have a great one.
Thanks.
Happy birthday, Nirav. Thanks so much for joining us, everyone. Of course, follow Bharat Varta on all the social handles. And if you're a premium subscriber and you're on the Zoom call, please do stay back. We will have an interactive session after this with all of your hosts. Thank you so much again. And look forward to seeing you all next week. Stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.